Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 3001, where Kurt Weller speaks to Bob Dobbs about media ecology, metaphysics, and life in general. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of, not the first episode, the first episode with the new opening title track sequence that I just recorded. This is actually the latest episode of The Outer Channel. Today is July 19th, 2010. Haven't done the show in a couple weeks, so I'm looking forward to catching up with Mr. Bob Dobbs. Bob.
Hey, Kurt. Good
How
to be
you
back.
Doing,
great to be back, Kurt. Wonderful to be back.
Good. Yes, it is. Did you hear the new theme song I made?
No, I don't get to hear anything until I call you. How could have I heard it?
I don't know. I'm just
I guess I... Okay. Well, what is it? Till I hear it?
Yeah, here we go.
Okay.
Welcome to episode 3001, where Kurt Weller speaks to Bob Dobbs about media ecology, metaphysics, and life in general.
Just a minute, Kurt. You know, you can listen in on this, Carol.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so just now be... Were you an hour or 2 hours today, Kurt?
We're an hour.
Just an hour today. Okay. Yeah, I just Karen sometimes likes to listen to my scintillating conversations with people anonymously, so I was just telling her, hey, you got to tune in to Kurt Meet. So,
yeah, that
there
would
was.
Be great. I welcome. Listen.
Yes, you just heard, did you hear her go, yeah, yeah?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
You had the famous Dr. Dean on your show for a nanosecond.
She's been on before. She's snuck a little tidbit in there before.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So what struck me about it is, I hope it was intentional. It sounds like welcome to the crypt. It sounds so dead. Your words, like, this is Kurt, and we're going to have a mediacologist on.
Yeah, I was trying to go for this ultra serious, like, intellectual radio kind of
thing. Well, it's not. That's not you, Kurt. And it comes across funereal. FUNUREAL. Welcome to the wake. Kurt has passed on. Bob will host a ceremony. But then the music's pretty good. I like the music. It's good. And
Thank you.
It goes.
It's Miami. I recorded that.
Excellent. But did you warble it on purpose? There's a warble effect at some point in it, like a distorted.
Yeah, that's me jamming on the pitch and mod sliders.
I can see why, Kurt. You're a great guy for open mic Mondays.
Yeah.
Or Wednesdays, whatever they do it.
I love to lay down the beat. You know, I love to have a good time, and I like to rock out. And
well, that sounded like you didn't know what beat to really begin with, so you just sort of did them all at the same time.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well,
you split into third base. It was sliding into third base kind of effect.
It was stealing third. I was stealing third base.
Can you do that? You know, that's interesting. I always think of stealing second, but I don't image much of stealing third. Well, I guess you can do it anywhere. I don't know. It's always rounding at second is where people are stealing stuff, it seems to me, in my image of baseball, which I haven't seen in 25 years.
Yeah, well, I think they had a guy that stole third.
Okay. All right. So Kurt, we only get an hour. You hit the jackpot, Kurt. You hit the jackpot. I don't even know if people use that phrase anymore, but, you know, I come from way back, so it's the phrase we used to say when we wanted to announce something significant.
Okay.
I finally did the Brittany Murphy.
Oh, nice.
Oh, man, you're not going to believe this. Okay, we'll begin. I'll bring up the articles that you sent me. Okay, Brittany apparently died December 19th, because this is posted the 20th. Last December, right? You know the exact date she died? No, it says died today. So posted December 20th. So I guess she passed on December 20th, 2009. So, you know, only 7 months ago, 8 months ago.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So it says Brittany Murphy, who made a splash playing the makeover victim in Clueless and later battled substance abuse, died today in Los Angeles. She was 32. The LA Fire Department was called to a home owned by Murphy's husband, Simon Monjack, where she was found in cardiac arrest and could not be revived. TMZ reports and multiple sources are confirming. So I saw Clueless, and I remember a little blonde girl was the main character. Was that her?
No, she was the geeky girl that gets a makeover.
I don't remember that makeover aspect. I remember enjoying the movie. You know, there was something cute about it. Don't remember the content, but I think I was trying to spy on what the young kids were into.
Yeah, I saw it when it came out, and I really don't remember anything about it. And to be honest, I don't really remember her part in it.
Right, that's what I don't remember. And this would be, this is like 15 years ago or more, right?
Yeah, I think like 94 maybe, 95
yeah.
Around then.
Okay. So I finally got a chance. I haven't been doing miscellaneous sessions with Ion lately. We've been doing major stuff on the Book of Revelations and stuff for informationfarm.blogspot.com, major themes and topics. So I had a chance to do miscellaneous stuff like this. I would consider this in passing. Don't even know if I would dwell on it for more than a minute, you know, depending on Ion. Okay, so here's what happened. She was not a drug
user. What's that disclaimer there?
No, I just...
A minute? Maybe 5 minutes.
When I do miscellaneous, I bring up passing topics that people suggest that occurred to me, and I don't know how long Ion's going to go into it.
Oh, I see. I got you. Okay.
And he might have just said something, yeah, she transitioned, that's all, no problem, she's in the guff, you know, and then that would be the end of the story.
Oh, that's kind of like what he did with B.B. Gabor when I asked him about him. He didn't pick on the bar. Right, okay, I understand now.
Right, so I never know, though. I never know what's going to come from these miscellaneous topics, and this one was great. What happened is she was a little upset, but not getting much attention. She's low media profile, and she's the kind of person, I guess, who wanted some kind of media profile and wasn't getting it, I guess wasn't getting gigs, feeling a little out of it, but she wasn't doing drugs, and she went to Ion made the term spiritualist, a spiritualist named Angela Martinez. Angie, different name. She changes around. But I don't know who Angelina or Angela Martinez is, but Ion named her. And she went to her three years before she died. And in the course of the reading or session with the psychic, maybe not even a psychic, you know, some kind of ESP. Whatever spiritualist means, I guess some people might say psychic. She, Angela, told Brittany about parallel world traveling. Okay? Brittany, she was told to drive out of LA or whatever, way out there in the deserts or, you know, abandoned place, you know, lonely stretches. And would see something. I have to rehear the reading. She would see a light or something. Can't remember what it was, but something she was told she'd see, and to drive towards it, and she'd go into another world. And she actually did that and went into another world. And actually, if I don't recall, there might have been a detail or two. She was able to get back, thought this was pretty neat, and started doing it a lot, and got used to it. And she would I read a lot of the articles you sent me to Ion, you know, quotes of friends. They're all bullshitting because no one saw her much the last couple of years of her life. She got to the point
in other dimensions.
That's right. She got to the point where she didn't have to drive out to that place. She would just get into her car in the garage, just sit there, and then go into another world. So she decided that she liked being over there more than here. Now, she can come back, and I think she basically wanted to leave, so she faked her death. So if you read these reports, they find drugs on her bed table, but they're not used. And there's no drugs in her stomach. Well, what she did, in the parallel world she went to, you can make clones of yourself. And she brought back a clone the day she passed. I mean, you know, I don't think the clone was here long. And the clone was dead. That's why when they found the person, they can't figure out how Brittany died. They're only making it up that it was cardiac arrest. And the reason they can't figure it out is the clone was already dead when she brought it over, just laid the dead thing in the bathroom or wherever they found her. And Brittany... You know, I don't know if she rings the doorbell or just, I don't know how it gets found, the body.
I think the mother or the husband found the body.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I'll jump ahead and get maybe those details in a minute. But so the body was found and she went into another world. So that was pretty interesting. Now, we could say that Ion seems to have this all-purpose answer for every major death seems to be a guy faking their death. But we've only done Michael Jackson and Elvis. But she successfully got away from this life, and I don't know how much she comes back. But here's what's interesting is her husband, Simon Monjak, is puzzled by this, that she just dropped dead, and he finds out about Angela Martinez. And he... he goes and sees her, trying to figure out what happened to his wife, and she tells him about parallel worlding. So he learns how to do it, and he does it by, in the kitchen, there was a refrigerator and a little wine cooler box beside the fridge. He would open the door of the wine cooler and the, wine box. Wine cooler is a little bottle, right?
Right.
Yeah, a little fridge for drinks and extra stuff. He'd open the little fridge.
One of those frat boy fridges.
Yeah. So he'd open the door of the little fridge and the door of the main fridge at the same time, and that's how he could go through a portal. So he started doing it and liked it and decided to go find Brittany. And so he staged his death the same way. And we'll go into the details. He didn't do a dead clone. He did someone else, something else. But anyways, he ended up in another world. He hasn't found Brittany. He didn't go to the right world.
Oh, zing.
All right. Now, let's go into some of the details about... they say here, Brittany Murphy's mom and husband tried to revive Brittany. At least 10 types of prescription drugs, including anxiety, pain, and anti-seizure meds, were found on the actress's nightstand. But no alcohol containers, paraphernalia, or illegal drugs were discovered. So she purposely laid out these drugs on the nightstand just to throw it off. She even made herself look thin and was seen as being thin before she moved on. She did that all on purpose to create these plausible explanations for the human mind, who always looks for a reason, right?
Yes.
And when they purged her stomach, there was nothing in there. That didn't make any... here's a point. Murphy had been complaining of shortness of breath and abdominal pain for more than a week before she died. Monjak told authorities he thought nothing of it because she often suffered from severe menstrual pains. So she did fake the shortness of breath and all that stuff. The actress, whose career was plagued by rumors of eating disorders and drug use, not really true. Oh, I forgot to say, when she went the first day she went out on Angelina's advice and successfully went through a portal, she took a little meth. Ion said she did do meth on the first day. I don't know if she kept it a little bit, but basically she didn't need it later once she knew how to do it. She wrote a will before her marriage to Monjak, that everything left her mother. There was a little bit of a tension between her and Monjak because everybody told her not to marry him. He was a creep or something. Ion was a bit gentle about that. You know, he said, yeah, it might have been a little strange. But, and he said, well, why do you think? I said, did he steal from that? They charge him with stealing from some movie. I jumped down here, might see it.
Factory Girl?
Say it again.
Was it the Factory Girl movie?
Yeah, which I saw. That was about Andy Warhol, right?
Yeah, and Edie Sedgwick.
Yeah, I saw that. I asked, well, did he steal the money? And Ion said, well, he kind of deserved it, or he thought he deserved it, and it wasn't really a stealing. But I said, well, did it bother Brittany? He said, well, she did leave the money to the mother. You know. So Ion kept it a bit vague, but maybe he was a little shady, but not a big deal. And let's see. I just had to move away from the window because there's a big garbage truck going by. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I did hear that in the background.
Yeah. Okay, so she looked. Some people said, Ion said it was funny these people were talking about the way she was before she died, and they hadn't seen her in a long time. And they had to pretend they knew her and friends, and that she looked, quote, she looked painfully thin, even sick. She looked like she hadn't eaten in who knows how long. Her skin was terrible. All that are exaggerations. And but the point was that she, for the last couple of years that she was doing this, she spent a lot of time away. And you can, according to Ion and Parallel Worlding, you can be gone from here for 5 minutes if someone who knows you perceives you and you're here and then you're gone, and maybe you went down the street or something and you're back 5 minutes. It can go on. That can be actually in a parallel world like 2 weeks or a year or something. You know what I mean? The times are different.
Oh, I see. Yeah. She might have been gone like 2 weeks in the other dimension, but no one would even miss her, really.
Yeah, she'd only actually been gone a half an hour. So it's totally variable. I don't know if there's laws about it, about if it depends on each world you go to, whatever. But the point is, she spent a lot of time away, and that's why no one saw her much. Most of these people in the article say, I hadn't seen her in a while, you know. She was scarce. But that's because she wasn't around. Let's see. You know, I'm looking at the picture you sent, though, of her and Simon. And she looks like maybe a 45-year-old. I don't know. She looks like a yuppie wife who's trying to look older than she is. I mean...
Wait, which picture? Which one?
Her and Simon are holding a frame.
That's actually her mother and Simon.
Oh, okay. All right, because she does look older, and I said, well, this is weird.
They're holding a picture of Brit. Yeah.
Okay, so forget what I was saying. I'm just wondering, she kind of looked old and matronly in this picture, but forget that. We'll assume she looked her age. Okay, what else? She got very nice comments from Alicia Silverstone, Donald Faison, and Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith says, never met her, but sad to hear about Brittany Murphy. Good night, Ms. Murphy. Hope you're rolling with the homies someplace nice. Why do they talk to him? If he made clues, he would have met her.
That was...
I've seen some of his movies. He's like a semi-indie guy. He's got a little gig going. Makes these cute, funny movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. He like Clerks and Mallrats.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that. So, I mean, look, why is he commenting? Never met her. Good night, Mrs. Murphy. Hope you're rolling with the homies someplace nice. Man, that guy's never going to get an Oscar.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what that means. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, who's Josh Groban? You ever heard of him?
I think he's some sort of musician, but I've never heard him.
Well, he says, Hollywood loses another bright soul. How many more? A decade of decadence and devastation. Time to wake up.
Yeah, I think he's popular with the housewifey crowd. I think cause he's got one of those old sky. I think he's got like an Engelbert Humperdinck kind of thing going.
Oh, okay.
But he's popular with that, like. With the older...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the articles you sent, they play up that she was vomiting before death and maybe addicted to drugs and this and that. None of it's true. Whatever image that people actually had of that, she caused it on purpose. So she's doing well, and her husband's doing well. But now, here's one thing I unsaid. The problems of loneliness or not getting any media attention in this world... She's getting a little more media attention. She's working on it. It's improving it, but she's not satisfied her sense of lack in the other world.
Ah, okay.
Like she's oh, that's what she did. She would go over and build up her audience over there. I don't know how she did it. She would do gigs, you know, Monday night cafe, open night Monday readings, cafe readings, and get a bit of a and get some attention. She was building up her media profile. So when she left, it was probably when she had a gig, you know, got a movie part or something. And so Ion said that she still got her basic insecurity problems because you take yourself wherever you go, but she is getting a little more media attention than she would ever hear, you know. So meanwhile... Simon, I guess, is a little pissed off. He can't find her. He went to the wrong world.
Well, yeah, okay. isn't there like an infinite number of places to go?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ion doesn't name them. He just says world number. And like he said, Brittany went to world 783 or something. He just uses numbers, arbitrary numbers, because they have names, these worlds, but they're too much for us, too many names. So he just uses numbers.
I see.
So she went to 783 or some number like that, and he went to 4,021, you know, the wrong one. Is Simon Monjak, did he accomplish anything besides producing Factory Girl? No, they say he did not produce it. There's all this controversy. What did he do, this guy?
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, from what I've read, it sounds like he was like kind of a struggling producer kind of guy that was trying to get involved. And supposedly he wrote screenplays, but then they say he didn't actually write them. He just get his name on it. So I think he was just kind of a mover and shaker. wannabe type guy, from what I've heard. You know, from what I've gleaned from the press he's gotten. But it's been mostly negative. Like, a lot of people didn't like him.
Right, and he had accomplished something maybe in England?
Right.
And he was coming over for the big time. Okay, here's a headline. Simon Monjak, Warner Brothers killed Murphy. He will file a wrongful death suit in Brittany Murphy's death. He was asked why no autopsy. He says, it was nothing sinister at all. I just looked at Sharon's grieving face, and there was no way either of us wanted to cut open this perfect 32-year-old girl. So, and then it goes into whether he used her money or not, and he said she was broke. He had to put down rumors he was having sex with Brittany's mom. Then you had this great story, Brittany Murphy's husband found dead, and that's what intrigued you.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, the whole thing, well, because I'd just been talking about him to a coworker, and I was saying that I needed to go investigate this. I needed to, like, really find out what the hell's going on here, because it started sounding like a real event. And then the day that, like, I really started getting into it, he died.
Interesting. And, it was all leading up to this. I mean, you're finding out. I mean, that's just 2 months ago, May 24th, 2 months, May, June, July. Yeah, 2 months ago. We got the exclusive this quickly.
Yeah, I know. It's beautiful.
Yeah, so here's what, okay, is there more to say that? His death appeared to be of natural causes. It was ruled accidental, but likely preventable. They found no evidence of legal drugs. Now, here's what's funny. Later, they discovered numerous prescription drugs in the couple's home. He laid out in another article, they found a number of pill bottles on the nightstand in the bedroom. He did the same thing as Brittany. He laid out the same fake scenario.
Yeah, I know. That's what's so crazy about it. It was like, I mean, he made it look like drugs had something to do with it, but then the autopsy kind of didn't prove that.
Well, do you see how this story from Ion, this explanation is as valid or could be as valid as anybody else's, because it fits the facts as are presented? I mean, it's a different way of looking at it.
It makes sense. And like they say, you know, the easiest explanation for something is usually the true one.
And right.
This seems like the easiest explanation to me.
Yeah, because what's interesting, you naturally, for no reason, thought something was odd about this, just from what you read, felt something was odd, and that means there was probably something odd, and it turns out the facts, the things that you noticed were odd, and they fit this larger scenario, though.
Yes.
I mean, you would wonder, why would he lay, you know, why did he have the same drug? It's exactly the same. Body drops dead, but no evidence of anything, no problem with the body. Now,
it's insanity. And
yeah.
But people buy it, you know? But it doesn't add up.
Well, people don't buy it. They haven't got time to think about it. There's too much news, too much information for anybody to stop and focus on it. I mean, you know, on the surface, you're an idiot to have worried about this, you know? But, you know, that's why we can say that this information, the Android meme stuff, before Cold Fusion is the most democratic situation, because anybody can look into anything and find out something. You see, everybody's a part of the global information snooping resource. You brought it up, you know, you were wondering about it, the only person wondering about it in a way who wasn't involved. And then you bring it up to me and look what we discover. So everybody's involved in the information society. That's why McClellan said, you know, it's hyper-primitive tribalism. There's no leaders. Everybody's involved. You know, you never know who's going to contribute anything to any situation, right? You never know who's serendipitous going to find something. And that's why people, you know, popular culture, all you need is love and all that Beatles stuff and whatever came after, or this togetherness, it's a result of the technological fact that everybody's involved in the information environment. So that's why people say, why should we have countries and nations and borders and visual boundaries? We're all together, and who the hell are these people who won't let us be all together? Because actually everybody's contributing to the information society.
Right. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like
it's a technical reason.
By me putting that idea out there to you, we find out probably one of the most earth-shattering things of the past couple months.
Yeah, now listen to this. So how did he, she went and got a dead person, brought a dead clone. You can make clones in some of these worlds. So like some of these worlds are way more advanced than us. Some are sort of behind.
I was going to ask you, are they like in the same, I mean, is it the same time there? Or since the time is different, is she like in a future version?
No, no,
or?
It can be very similar to this world, just slightly different. That Air France that went down, that was the first what I call mystery landscape phenomenon that Ion talked about, you know, in April 2009, somewhere around then when that Air France went from Brazil to Paris. Well, it landed. It went through a gate. A plane goes through a gate. People go through portals or smaller, but the bigger things go through gates. I don't know. She may have gone through a gate because the car is big, but maybe it's not too big. So we'll just call it a portal. That's what we were saying when I was talking to Ion. But the people go to Paris. When they landed in the other world, it was Paris, but slightly different, but only slightly different. But eventually, people noticed it. I don't know. Like you go to your home in the other world, and you meet your husband, and your husband's name Bill, not Ben. You know, something like that. You start, he won't respond to Ben anymore.
You
tell him he's called Ben. Slight differences. They can be because in an infinite eternal world, there's no stopping any possibility. There's no boundary, so there can be very radical changes, and there can be very middle changes, and there can be very non-slight changes. You see, there's no boundaries. That's why there's infinite worlds.
Yeah. So do you think that Philip K. Dick did the same thing?
I have to ask. I didn't ask. I mean, I don't. Maybe I did. I've asked about so many things. Yeah. Right now, I can't remember if I asked about Ion.
Okay.
I mean, asked Ion. But the thing is that she got a clone and they just took this dead body and it was empty stomach and all because it hadn't eaten anything because it was dead when it arrived. Okay. Now, you would have to imagine she brought it through her garage, you know. She was out in the garage, I assume, and in the car and she went out through the car in another world and then dragged him. If you made a movie out of this, you would have dragged the body through the car or through a wall in the garage and then took it into the back room and dumped it into
this,
the bathroom.
This would actually be the most amazing movie, I think.
Well, wait, it's going to get better. We're just beginning here. It's just beginning. So,
wow, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So Simon, what did he do? He never got a clone. He went to, you know, in Hollywood, they have a lot of those agencies that provide doubles for celebrities.
Stand-in.
You can go to parties and people will be Brad Pitt or somebody. They'll have somebody there who looks pretty close to him, so you think you're interacting with Brad Pitt, either knowingly or jokingly. I don't know. But there are agencies that provide doubles. And I think that guy who writes for he's an editor at New Yorker magazine, Kurt somebody, who started Spy magazine. He wrote a novel, you know, a few years ago about. No, I'm wrong. It's the guy, Bruce Wagner. You ever read Bruce Wagner novels?
That's the guy who did Wild Palms, right?
Right, that's right.
You know what's weird is I was just watching Wild Palms today.
Oh, we got to talk about that. I got a whole bunch of stuff on that. We'll do that.
That's crazy, though, that you mentioned that the same. No one talks about Bruce Wagner. So why is it? And it comes up. That's what I'm talking about, Bob. That's why this show is
phenomenal.
Incredible.
That's right, because it's Xenocrity. I never have to prepare a script. The script's being written for me by others while they're living their lives.
Right.
Right?
It's incredible, Bob.
I know. It happens every show in some weird way.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so Bruce Wagner... He did a trilogy of Hollywood of novels about L.A., I think, but the second or third one is about – I know there's a scene – I read a review, a scene or characters who are involved in the double agency, right? You know what I mean? That's how I heard about it, that there are these agencies that provide doubles for parties, and that is a scene in his hilarious novel.
Okay.
So you've never read his novels?
No. Well, the only thing I've seen is Wild Palms.
Well, Wild Palms – did you read – it was in Details magazine in the, you know, the late 80s, early 90s.
It was a comic book. Yeah, it was a comic book, right?
Yeah, part of Details. It was serialized in Details magazine. Did you read it when it was serialized?
No, I didn't.
Anyways, no, that's great. I mean, I've always wanted to talk about wild palms. I got some great stuff on that. Okay.
Let's do the next show on wild palms.
Right. So,
I'll watch the whole thing again.
And that's what you're doing now? You're just reviewing it now? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see it when it was on the middle of May, 1993, two or three nights on TV? Did you see it that weekend?
No, I didn't see it until it came out on video, probably in 98.
Okay. So Simon figured out that he was going to do the same thing. He was going to find a double and have the double take the heat and he escape. So what he did, he found a double. Apparently you can do this. A double who was on the death list, prescribed by his doctor as going to be dead, had a heart condition or something. You know, a guy who's going to die who happens to look like Simon. That's what he found. That sounds pretty preposterous, but Ion said that's what – you can do that. And so he found this guy, and so
so then you probably, pay the family money or something. I can see how that would work. Yeah, go on.
No, exactly. Sorry. Like – let's say the guy, we'll call him Billy. Billy is sick. He's going to die. He's got a will and insurance. Everything's covered. Okay, Simon comes along and proposes that he die somewhere else as Simon. The guy's going to say, well, I got to leave. Since I won't die as myself, it won't be registered that I've died, and my family won't get the insurance. And Simon says, yes, I will give you $250,000. That you will give to your wife, who knows you're going to die. It's all prepared for. And that's how she'll get the insurance. It'll be under the table, and she won't have to pay taxes on it.
This is great. Okay.
Isn't that neat?
Makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So the family agreed. I find it hard to believe that they find a guy who looks like him, and he's going to die. You know, he's sick. And the sick part, that's a stretch, but I guess there's a billion people in this world, and you can find those kind of situations. And in a computerized society, you can have agencies that can scan and find people. That's the thing. Everybody's got a huge repository of people and names and the registered people that look like stars, and they just got big files. And you can do that with electronics. You couldn't do this without electronics, you know. You couldn't find people. But anyways, it just shows you that the chemical body is content, is a garbage dump for the digital archives. So they paid the guy, the mother, the wife off in the family, and she was happy. She didn't. I asked these kind of questions. Did she know what was up? You know, and I think Ian said not at first, but she might have figured out later. But basically, she wasn't. Simon doesn't tell the family what's really going on, just that they require this guy to die. So then it's announced that Simon's dead. Then the wife figures it out. You know what I mean? Oh, my guy. But they might say, well, why did Simon want to fake his death?
Right.
But they can't. They don't. You know, Simon doesn't stay around to tell them. But if they hear this show, it'll be interesting if any of these families that are related to the two stories hear this show, whether they'll sue us or give us a call and back us up. So, oh yeah, we knew that. I know the agency they went to. You know, blah blah blah. So we'll see.
Nothing to be sued over. I mean, we're not. You know, this is what I am. We're just talking.
Yeah, we're just making up crap. We're gossiping about public figures.
That are dead, so.
Yeah. It turned out not to be dead. Okay, so he arranged, this guy, what Simon does is he waits till the guy drops dead. He can't, you don't kill the guy. You just know he's going to be dead in the next few months or a year, within a year, and you just wait. And I guess the guy was staying at Simon's home. I'm not sure where he was. But it's exactly the same as Michael Jackson's double was the one at that house that, you know, no one knew why Michael Jackson had that house, and he had no money apparently, so how could he afford the house? But that was the place where the double for Michael Jackson was. He was very ill, going to drop dead any day, and that doctor who's been charged, he sat there and babysat the guy until he died, and then they call up Michael, hey, the guy just died, okay, go into Operation Blackbird, you know, and start doing what we have to do. So Simon Monjack waited till the guy dropped dead and then moved on it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so is there anything more? He paid off the wife. The wife accepted it. The wife might have figured it out after the guy was dead. And they can come back and forth, come back to this world, unless Simon is lost and he can't get back. I'm not sure about that. anyway, so this, I said, wow, Kurt's going to love this story. This is pretty good. And so you psychically, synchronously, knew there was something weird about this and were preparing for today's show. You were on assignment and worked on this show for 8 months.
Yes.
You researched it. You gathered together all these little articles in my little file. Okay, so this led to, I started saying, how many, I don't know how it came up, the order of it, but Ion says, Bob, there are law firms that specialize in preparing fake deaths for people.
Okay.
I go, wow, that's that. You mean there's a lot of people who know about this? And he says, yes, you'd be surprised. And I said, that's because there are a lot of parallel worlders that are coming back and forth. There's a lot of strange traffic at airports, cargo planes coming in and out from parallel worlds. He says, yeah. And I said, so it's basically a big economy. And he says, yeah, it is. And Ian has said on our show for a year now that the only reason we got 6 or 7 billion people is many of them are from parallel worlds. And that Ion says we could not have had 6 billion people if we just relied on our own chemical bodies or, you know, original people here. So that's a whole interesting scenario, that there's this whole economy. So there's these law firms that specialize in this. And Ion, I said, name them. And he gave me 3 or 4 law firm titles. And I said, could I say these on cash flow? And he said, well, you could, but they would quickly disappear. They're not going to allow themselves to be known. And I said, would I be sued? And they said, no, but it wouldn't serve any good purpose because they would disappear pretty quickly. So I'm not going to give out the names of the law firms, but if you have a private reading, I'm going to say on cash flow on Wednesday, private reading with Ion, he'll give you if you want to know the law firms, he'll do it privately in a private reading, but not on the radio.
Wow.
So then I got pursuing this, and I said, how many famous people did this, you know, fake their deaths? And Ion listed off about 25 people. over the most of the 20th century. And what was I going to say about that? I have not gone back and reviewed the list. I'm going to try review it and note a few and name a few on Wednesday's show on Cashflow. But here's a stunner. Here's one guy who faked his death and did this whole thing. John Lennon.
Really?
Now, isn't that amazing? How did that happen? What did he do? How did he get this fake assassination?
Did he get a double did Chapman unwittingly steal a double?
Yeah. Maybe. I did not get a chance to go into the details. I will. But he said a whole bunch of names, but that was astounding. And I said, well, does Yoko Ono know this? And Ion goes, who? I go, Yoko Ono. And I repeat it. I go, Yoko Ono. He goes, who? And when Ion starts going, who? It's like a CIA agent who's killed somebody. They exterminate him. He's, what's that word? You've been exterminated from the public record. You're a non-person, an un-person.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
yes.
There's no acknowledgement that you ever lived. Well, when Ion doesn't like somebody, he'll do that. He'll go, who? Now, I've met Yoko. I don't want to, you know, smear or anything, but I'll just say that Ion said that that she was a control freak and that John did this whole thing partly to get away from her.
Yeah, okay.
How's that for an exclusive, Kurt?
I'll buy that.
Okay, so let me see. Lon Chaney did it. Eartha Kitt did it. I'm just thinking some of the names. Oh, here's a major one. And this guy was on the board of Mary McLuhan, McLuhan's daughter. Mary McLuhan's Marsh McLuhan Center on Global Communications, which she formed in the early 80s with Walter, with this guy's help, and Shirley Hofstetter, who is the was the Secretary of Education in Carter's administration. They're good friends of Mary. So this guy was on the board and helped her get it launched. And Mary raised 25 million bucks in 25 million bucks in 20 22 years. She would create awards for innovative teachers. That was what the award was. So on her board was Walter Cronkite.
Cronkite
faked his death. He's a parallel worlder.
This is crazy, Bob.
I know. This is what Terrence McKenna calls novelty. Remember he said we'd have more and more novelty till we had the ultimate novelty in 2012. Do you know that scenario?
No, the ultimate novelty in 2012. What is that?
Well, the singularity. We'll just have so much novelty going on, we'll all fucking die of heart attacks or something.
unless we rift ride into another dimension.
Yeah, unless we all fake our deaths.
Bob, are you from this timeline?
Well, I sort of thought I was. But what I'm finding out, and this is top secret, since I created ION, which is the greatest event in human history, me and Carol, as I hear more and more about what everybody else is doing, just last week I said to Carol, you know what? Maybe we're monsters. I mean, we're the ones who brought ION forth, and all these incredible stories and facts or whatever they are coming out. Remember, we started this thing. Where the hell? Who are we? Maybe we create the whole universe. I don't know. I just started this. I haven't asked ION. I actually said I'm beginning to think I might want to find that I don't really know who I am, or we have not explored that. And ION goes, yes. That's right, Bob. You've been asking so many questions about everybody else, you forgot to ask about yourself.
Yeah, but, you know, the more I think about it, it's like, you know, so much of the things that, you know, like your diaries and stuff, many of your detractors would argue that there's no proof, but maybe there's no proof here.
That's right.
Maybe you inadvertently ripped those or something.
Yeah, my diaries are actually me remembering what I actually did in which world, we don't know.
Right.
Because the diaries, the whole last 25 years of what I'd done on the radio that you can hear on the timeline, uncannily predicted this fucking ION thing. That's what's fucking weird.
It is. It's messed up. And then I'm stoked that we started the show right when this was happening.
Yeah.
No, I'm Dennis. Because I vanished for 8 months, remember?
That's right. You parallel worlded. You called it a divorce, but actually, Kurt, we were watching you. You were all over the place.
I vanished for 8 months, and then I came back for the creation of ION.
No, I think you actually were. We did a show last July, about a year ago. I think ION was back. I mean, ION was here. Before you disappear. Like, when did you have your separation? Wasn't it like in August, September, or your divorce, or whatever it was?
May.
Right.
May
and see, it makes total sense. And we did a show in July, and that's two months after your divorce. You said, I'm finding it hard to be up. I'm getting depressed. So you see, it would have taken a few months after the divorce to get the effect of it. So logically, you disappeared about a year ago.
Yeah, exactly. And if you ask any of my friends, I was pretty much gone.
What did you say about your friends? My friends would all say
that I was gone.
Weren't around socially. You weren't around socially at all.
Right.
Okay. All right. So the point is here is that ION was here before you disappeared. ION caused your divorce. And then you disappeared, and then you came back ready to be a publicist for ION.
Okay.
many clients who've had private readings with ION have gotten divorced pretty quickly.
I can see that.
Yeah, it's just that you were. We'd have to look back in the archives. I think we started. We only did one or two, and then you stopped. You know what I mean? Or something like that.
That's true, yeah.
About a year ago. Now, what's real?
Right now, all the episodes are in disarray, and I have to get it cleaned up and put back up.
Okay. I would rather in the future you say paramediacology, not mediacology, paramedia, because there's no particular media as a separate entity anymore.
Oh, I can change that.
Yeah.
You hear that, Bob? It's done.
Okay, good. All right, so here's the big thing. As I start to hear about there are law firms, there's a whole economy around this, I have talked to Ion about when a client asked a very good question a couple months ago, said, if the guff is emptying, how much is emptied on a scale of 1 to 10? And Ion said, it's about at 8, which means 80% of the guff is emptied. So I got this idea because I've been talking to Ion about technology and electricity and thought and the non-physical and all this stuff. And I said, well, okay, when were we at 1 on the scale of 1 to 10 of an emptied guff? And he said, I didn't even wait. I just said, was it about the time of the telegraph? And Ion said, yes. I said, about 150 years ago? Yes, that's when it began. And I said, well, that fits in with what we were talking about, electricity. The electric effect here is pretty amazing. And that unleashed the most violent century ever in history, recorded history, and that's the 20th century. So many, many people die. The reason the guff's going to empty is that so many souls go into the guff, it can't hold them anymore. And then they kind of spill back here. So the guff empties. So that's why we have a lot of people on this planet in this century, a lot of wars and violence and death and all this stuff, a lot of transition to the guff and then people spilling back here. And I said, okay, so if we're at the 80% mark, are you saying that the 9 and 10, the remaining 20% is going to be very dramatic? And I said, yes, it's going to be a mass exodus, big mass death, you know, and all, Hades all over the place, 250,000 wiped out here and there. And Ion doesn't give the actual trigger points or causes, but you're going to have this dramatic mass exodus at the end of this, around now, so to speak, whereas it's been going on for 150 years. And that's why you have this economy of parallel worlders. And so I said, this is revelatory news for the so-called working class, the dupes who have no clue what the elites are doing. You know what I mean? They don't understand. And so this is like the final secret for the working class to hear. The people who think they're poor and are oppressed and all that, whatever you want to call them, working class, oppressed people, victims of
self.
What?
The have-nots, maybe?
The have-nots, yeah. They need to know this. They have to realize, shit, everybody else is escaping. Why don't you start doing it? You know, you don't have to be stuck here. So this is the liberating part of – this is the Che Guevara part of my life, you know, the liberating the peasants of not knowing what's going on. And you got all these people, you know, they got law firms to go to. They got a whole structure that can cover up for them. Michael Jackson did it. Elvis did it. You know, this is very interesting.
I like it. Everybody's just going to be saying, I'm getting the hell out of here.
No, yeah, they do that at first, but then they can come back. I mean, Michael Jackson comes back. His kids now know that he didn't die.
He's come back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you come back and forth. He spent a lot of time. He watched that big Staples thing in his mother's home, or I guess it was his mother's home. Yeah, he watched it right there, that big broadcast or whatever the hell it was. Which was a year ago, which then comes to the big point after talking to Ion the other night about this. I said, oh, this is going to be great for Kurt's show and for Cashflow, and it's actually the anniversary in July about this time. James Martinez and I had a whole press conference and laid out 37 questions that Ion developed for us about the improbabilities around the circumstances of Michael Jackson's death. This is the anniversary, and now we're on a whole new level, thanks to Kurt's on assignment to probing of the Brittany Murphy story.
Wow, I'm totally wow. See, that's how it goes, man. I stumble ass backwards into
like,
revelation.
That's right, like me. and what you know, I didn't look it up for like two months. You know, it's been lingering for 2 months. I kept forgetting, but it was not really appropriate to do it until now, the anniversary of Michael Jackson's press conference,
well,
when we did him.
Exactly. Well, exactly. Now, you know, things happen when they're meant to happen. You can't.
Right.
You can't. You can't. Like the song says, you can't hurry love. You just gotta wait.
And that's right. And that's why I can be considered such a loving person. Any famous person like myself would have said, "Screw you, Kurt. I'm not looking that up. I didn't even like her. Blah blah blah." You know, I remembered to do it. I took responsibility for it. I eventually got around to asking, and I got a great gift from it. I got a whole new level of stuff for Wednesday for an exciting show.
Exactly. See?
Yeah. See? And see? And what's funny, I could just see the listeners going, "Go away. There's no way that John Lennon's stage is dead." That's going to be too much for everybody. You know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of, "Ion has blown it now. That's improbable. How did he do it? How come? Did Yoko know it? How did she do it? Blah, blah, blah." You know, it's going to be a lot of consternation.
You know, disbelief, you mean, like, what's your quote about disbelief? That's,
A belief is a thought you've been thinking a long time. That's what Ion says. Oh, you mean the technique of suspended judgment?
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, so how many? We only got a few minutes. What do we got left?
Yeah, we got 4 minutes, Bob.
Okay, let me just give you what happened on, it was May 15th or 16th. I know it was the middle of May, 93. Nelson Thal, now known as the brain-dead Lenny Bloom, he met a woman in L.A. who had a TV show. And she talked to me and Nelson a couple times on the phone. She said, "Boy, you guys make a great show." She had interviewed, it was like a cable show, but it was really done well. It was almost semi-professional. Kit Renee, I think her name was, Kit Renee. So she was interested in interviewing Tim Leary. So she arranged for Nelson and I to be part of her interview of the Tim Leary thing. And I had moved, this probably came more possible because I had moved to L.A., and was staying with Jerry Fialka. And so Nelson, who has no money problems, he flew in on Saturday, Friday or Saturday, May 15th, 16th, something like that. You could look up the calendar, what actually the Saturday was. And we went up to Tim Leary's home up in the Beverly Hills. You know, it's actually the hill part. He overlooked Clark Gable's or Cary Grant's house. Well, I remember that. So we walk into the house about, you know, 10 in the morning, 9:30, 10, and there's no one there. So we're looking around at the paintings. I go into the kitchen, and there's nothing but beer bottles or alcoholic bottles. I'd heard he was an alcoholic. Walter Boer told me that. There were so many bottles, it definitely looked like an alcoholic scene. And we're looking at the paintings, and then we found a copy of McLuhan's Take Today, The Executive is Dropout, a great book that McLuhan put out in 72, and it's signed to Tim by Corinne McLuhan, McLuhan's wife. And so probably Leary got it after McLuhan died in 1980, because he came through in Toronto a couple times in the 80s. He performed as a comedian at the Yuck Yucks Club. I went to that in the spring of 1980 or so. So he... Nelson had been talking to Leary about McLuhan stuff, and Leary was really into McLuhan again. So we go to his house, and we're looking around. All of a sudden, Leary walks out, and what do we got, a minute left?
Yeah.
Leary walks out, comes out of his bedroom or something, and Nelson is in his silly businessman suit, you know, totally opposite of Leary's world. I'm there dressing casually, but he looks at me, and he looks at Nelson, and he goes, "What the hell? Who are these guys?" He was totally, I could tell. He did, like, where were we, FBI? It was like Nelson was an FBI guy, and I was a fake FBI guy pretending he was a hipster or something. I don't know. But Leary was puzzled, and he looked at us, and he goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "We're supposed to do a TV show." And he goes, "Oh, with Kit Renee?" And we go, "Yeah." Okay. So Kit and her crew come, and they take all day to set up. So I spent a lot of time talking to Leary, and I'll go into this other stuff later. But we did the – you can see the thing on my timeline. Maybe I'll send it to you. You can watch it, the interview that was broadcast. But the important thing is that night I went home to a hotel, and I somehow knew about Wild Palms. And these two young kids who were into the beatnik, neo-beatnik fad at that period, they came on, and Nelson was sitting in his hotel room on the bed talking to them, and I'm standing by the TV watching Wild Palms, trying to hear it, because they didn't care that I was watching it, and I had to watch it in the hotel room. So I watched it maybe two nights like that. But the third one I watched at Jerry's home, the third night. Anyways, that's the situation how I watched it.
All right, well, let's do Wild Palms next episode.
Yeah, the tenacity was that Wild Palms was about a new kind of Tim Leary character through holograms. It was Tim Leary replayed, and I was with Tim Leary that weekend.
Wow. Okay. Is that the Loggia character?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, Bob, thanks for calling, and I'm just mind blowing episode about Brittany Murphy. This is more than I could have even imagined when I asked you to ask Ion about this stuff. This is good stuff. So
yeah, that's why they all flack. They can't comprehend me. I'm always more than they can imagine.
Who?
Who? You're right. Very good, Kurt. No, we haven't killed them. We haven't killed them yet, so they're still knowable.
All right, Bob.
Okay, talk to you later, Kurt.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.